Gee, Dad's told many stories about Maralinga and Emu Fields in particular, because those tests, which was the first test on mainland Australia, was the test that had impact on that community at Wallatina, where Dad was, and his community family there north of the site, the test site. So, you know, he talks about the ground shaking and the black mist rolling and the fear that Aboriginal people felt when it came silently creeping up through the sand dunes and the Mulga, and, you know, just the knowledge of dust storms that Dad spoke about. It came with noise, but this one came silently and left a, you know, a black oily soot over window louvers, fruits. There was orange trees growing there, and just the fear that people took in trying to understand, just not knowing, and that was the real fear about it.
And of course, it had a life-changing effect on him.
Absolutely. A huge impact on him and a lifetime. And the sad thing was that it was over time. So soon after 1953 test, it took a couple of years, and slowly over a long period of time his sight failed on him, and over time then he became completely blind, and that's what those British nuclear tests took away. So when we came along as his children, we never, you know, he never saw us, and he's never seen his grandchildren or great-grandchildren for that matter. So, you know, we're reminded every day of what those British nuclear tests took away from us as a family, but also our wider Aboriginal community as well.
And of course, he became such a well-known figure campaigning about the impact of nuclear testing. When you look back at his work as an advocate, what makes you most proud of him?
The fact that he did stand strong and really achieve things along the way, like the Royal Commission into those British nuclear tests. The fact that he stood up for his people and said, you actually did wrong by our Ngunnawal, you did wrong by our Aboriginal people and our community. And, you know, he shared his story. He didn't talk on anybody's behalf, except his people, but also he was really strong in sharing his story and what he recalls of that day, but also what happened to him over that time of losing his sight. So, you know, I'm very proud that he's been able to get that story out, that he didn't feel intimidated to, you know, shut up and be quiet about it and don't say anything. He felt really it was a story that needed to be told and everybody needed to know about it. And I feel very proud that Dad has taken that step to let people know that it happened in our own backyard.
Well, in the past years, there have been a number of federal government attempts to establish a nuclear waste dump in South Australia, speaking of your backyard, mm-hmm. and you've been a vocal opponent to those attempts. What are your core concerns about the proposal?
Well, they say that it's safe, but, you know, you wonder why, out of sight, out of mind, and why they put the pressure on Aboriginal people that they want to stick a nuclear waste storage facility in our country and in our traditional lands. You know, the concern is the impact that it's going to have on Aboriginal people, on our natural environment, but also on us as a culture and as the First Peoples of this country. So I've been very vocal about it because we still continue to be impacted by this whole big industry, this whole nuclear industry. They've almost outdone themselves where they've, you know, played around and created their weapons and created power, nuclear power, but they haven't worked on a solution of managing the waste and managing it in an appropriate way. And that's where I feel that little bit of frustration is. They've outdone themselves. So they don't know what to do with the waste. And their solution is dig a hole and bury it out of sight, out of mind. So constantly the pressure is on Aboriginal people because we are out in those remote areas. We're not in metropolitan. We don't live in Adelaide. You know, we don't live in Sydney or, you know, for that matter, in Melbourne, in the big cities, where some of the waste or where waste is being produced. In when you talk about in Australia, we've got low intermediate level waste coming out of hospitals and so forth. They're currently being stored there at hospitals or in universities, but if it's safe, then they should manage it there and not have to impact on Aboriginal people and on our traditional lands as well. So that is a big concern for us. And we, you know, we fought this fight back in 1998, and my beautiful grandmother, Eileen Gumbawada Brown, fought very strongly with the Gubabiri Gungajuda in the what we called the Irari Wandi campaign. And that was the strong campaign against the federal government's proposal for a national nuclear waste storage facility. And they fought for 6 long years. And 6 long years, we were very successful and were winners. But that has come around a whole 360 again, where South Australia is impacted on the need to be the national solution to the nuclear waste.
Do you think there's consensus among Aboriginal groups in the state that the economic benefits will be outweighed by the health and safety factors?
There's real confusion in our community, and that's in our Aboriginal community. People are tempted by the dangling of those million-dollar carrots in front of us. And we struggle with that every day in trying to work it out and trying to see, okay, you know, where are our cultural responsibilities? Where is the role of us as Aboriginal people, and what is important to us? Is it dollars, or is it our identity and who we are? And so we are divided. There is a community that's divided. I know with my Yangunyada community, there is a strong stand. I know that Yangunyada people are really against it, and hence why I've been very vocal about it, representing Yangunyada people and strongly opposing the waste storage facility. So from my community, there's strength there. In other communities where it's being pushed on now, in Flinders Ranges, in Ngunyamatna community, people are divided. People are even divided in other communities as well because of the temptation of the millions of dollars that are dangling in front of people's eyes.
Well, you attended the recent talks at the UN about the treaty to ban nuclear weapons. What was it like to address that meeting?
It was a wonderful opportunity. I was very grateful that the International Campaign Against Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, approached me and asked if I would be there to represent and get Dad's story out and also to share our story. And I was very honoured, and I felt very proud to be there to represent Aboriginal people, and that our Aboriginal voice of South Australia and the wider Aboriginal community was being represented at the United Nations, and in such an important treaty negotiations to ban nuclear weapons. And so I was quite moved, and I had that opportunity to speak to the Assembly and speak to delegates, diplomats of other countries around the world who were there, who were present. You know, unfortunately, Australia wasn't there, along with other countries as well, like the UK and the US. But it was a good opportunity to actually say, well, it happened in our backyard, and it did. It had a huge impact on Aboriginal people. And so we were given that opportunity. I was given that opportunity to read an Indigenous statement also, and I quoted 2 paragraphs there about the disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people and Indigenous peoples of the world, and not only in our country, but when you hear about it globally, it's happened everywhere. Marshall Islands, in Tahiti, you know, it happened off in islands in our country as well, in Montebello Island. So, you know, they didn't only test in mainland, but they also tested out in the oceans. And it's had a huge impact on Aboriginal people and the Indigenous peoples of the world. And so there was that opportunity for us to really share that story, to get it out there, and to say why nuclear weapons need to be banned.
As you mentioned, Karina, Australia wasn't represented at those UN treaty talks. What challenges does their absence pose for your campaign?
It makes it a little bit challenging for us in that they, not having them there, they didn't hear the concerns from people from civil society of reasons why. And there's still a bit of work for us to continue that work back home, back here in Australia, and to work with our members of parliament, to work with our government that's in power today, to continue to struggle or to fight on reasons why we need to ban nuclear weapons and, you know, why Australia should really think carefully about being involved with, you know, countries that are nuclear countries and what are really our goals as a country ourselves and our role in peace and, you know, making sure that we as Australians are safe as well and the role that we can play in keeping our country away from destructive and catastrophic weapons like nuclear weapons. And we learn from those stories like in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Those Hibakusha that were there, strongly represented over there at the United Nations in New York City, have such a moving story. And you just cannot help it but get a lump in your throat and tears rolling down your face because the horror that they went through. And these weapons are not safe, and it's not about our security. These are really catastrophic and killing weapons, and Australia should really listen to what's happened to Aboriginal people of this country and the fact that we continue to be imposed by this industry and really think seriously about the future of Australia and where we are going and the role that we play in keeping us safe from nuclear weapons. And so there's a bit of work that needs to be done here in Australia and some more ongoing campaigning work that's needed and required to, you know, talk it up in our governments and state governments and national government, of course, federal government, to really, you know, stand strongly to ban nuclear weapons.
Karina, finally this evening, you've followed in your father's footsteps as a strong advocate on this issue. What's the best advice he's given you over the years?
You know, the best advice is to stand strongly in the two cultures. I wouldn't do what I do if Dad hadn't taught me to be a proud Aboriginal woman, and that's certainly something I take from that. He certainly moved finally between two cultures, but feel that you have a place and you can confidently, with competence, stand in a Western culture and share our story on why Aboriginal people were impacted by governments of the world, and in this case, in our story, it was the British government and the Australian government. And to really share that story and to really speak up strongly about it. So Dad led by example, and it was only natural for myself and, you know, I have an older sister who's been there supporting all along the way of our journey, and an older brother who's been there behind us to really stand strong to say we have a story. Aboriginal people were that badly done by, and people need to know about it. And we are messengers because Dad was a messenger. He was one who experienced it. He was there when the ground shook and the black mist rolled, and he shared that story. And as a second generation, you know, it is our responsibility to continue to share that story and not turn a blind eye to it because it hurt people and it hurt a lot of our people. And that's a part of the lessons that I learnt from Dad, is to speak up very strong and be proud of who you are as an Aboriginal woman, but also move confidence in two cultures that are completely different, but be competent in both of them. And so that's something that I have really taken on board to say. And I look back and it's a blessing that I have the confidence to walk in two cultures, and Dad certainly led, along with Mum as well, though they were true leaders. They are true leaders, that you can move in two cultures.
Karina, thank you so much for sharing your family's story and your story with us this evening on Speaking Out.
Thank you very much, Larissa.
Karina Lester, an anti-nuclear campaigner whose Aboriginal family have been deeply affected by the Maralinga testing.